Welcome to Core Light Defenders. I'm Richard Baitlick, strategist and author in residence at Core Light. In each episode, we explore insights from the front lines of NDR, network detection and response. And today I'm continuing a conversation with Vern Paxson, our chief scientist and co-founder at Core Light. In the previous episode, Vern and I discussed covert channels. These are a mechanism used by stealthy intruders to try to evade detection. Vern told me about techniques he and his team developed to identify covert channels abusing the domain name system. In this second part, Vern provides details and findings.
This was my first paper, as I recall, that made what we in academics call a complete orbit, which is you submit to one of the top four conferences, it rejects. You submit to the next, you reject, et cetera. All four rejected it. And then on the fifth submission, it was accepted by the one we tried originally. But it got better each time. Where we wound up was essentially a very powerful principled approach. And this is why I just really enjoy talking about this work, because it sort of achieved what one really wants to go after in detection work, which is you can say in sound terms why it works, and it's general and it's powerful. So here's the idea. The attacker, observing these lookups to kittens.com, the information they receive, you can just consider it like a time series of lookups. So, at this time, and you've got some resolution on the clock, and we use 10 milliseconds, I think. At this time, this name was looked up. And they've got just a whole bunch of those. And that's what they have to work from. The idea then is because we're observing all these lookups, we can similarly construct that time series. We take some care in how we represent it and skip those details. And now you can take a lossless compressor, because in real life, the benign versions of this often are highly redundant. So you can take a lossless compressor and try to reduce that time series as small as you can make it. That size that you achieve with the compressor is an upper bound on how much information could possibly be there, because you've represented it in that much size and it's lossless, so you can recover the original. In addition, you don't need to stick to just one compressor. You can try, and we tried, I think it was four different algorithms, and just pick the one that for that particular time series does the best, makes it the smallest. And that's still a bound. Given this, you can take what are often huge initial time series going to in benign traffic and reduce them to much, much smaller representations. You then, for any representation that is below your bound, let's stick with 10 kilobytes now. It's easy to keep in mind. You can say, well, if that was actually an attacker going to that domain, it was less than my bound. So, I don't need to worry about it further, because the deal I'm making with the analyst is I'll find everything above the bound. If it's above the bound, then you say, well, it looks like actually a lot of information was conveyed, and you flag it for the analyst. And what's cool is, we did even the timing. And so if they're using one of these sneaky timing channels, we'll still find them.
Vern, can you tell me how this might have worked outside the lab?
Yeah, how does that actually work in practice? Yeah. And we gathered an enormous amount of DNS lookups. So in the end, we had more than 200 billion from a variety of sites. It's wonderful having contacts with fellow data pack rats who can make stuff available. And we ran this detector on and some of the sites, it was years of data. And sure enough, we find tunnels. Some of them are, nearly all of them, are benign. It turns out, for example, that your antivirus, Sophos, when it wants to ask the mothership, hey, is this something I should be concerned about? It encodes all that into a bunch of DNS queries and sends it out. And back comes the answer to the query is either that's benign or that's a problem. So Sophos would pop up for each of these enterprises where we were analyzing all this data, it would pop up over and over.
Was it in the clear? Could you see it? Or did you have to do some kind of interpretation?
Yeah, you couldn't tell. I mean, it's just a whole bunch of gobbledygook, letters and numbers. Who knows what it is? And, that's sort of the point. And yet, you trust Sophos, so you don't think it's actually exfiltrating your information. Another one, Spotify would do this a lot. I'm like, what the heck's up with that? You know, is it busy trying to tell the mothership this is what's on this computer? What do you think they would like as music? I mean, I don't know. And you would like to know what's in these. Last part of the algorithm is to first, you need some sort of initial period where you just say, we're learning all of the things at the site that do a bunch of DNS communication. You know, either you ask the analyst, please look at these 50, or you just assume they're okay. And so you've got a sort of startup transient where you're finding all those. And then the idea is from going forward, as you find new ones, you alert those to the analyst. The analyst's got to go run them down. They're very often going to be benign. We showed that at the site where we had the most longitudinal data, which was Lawrence Berkeley National Lab. Once you've done all that pre-training or whatever you want to call it, then the analyst would be bugged in the long term about once a week. And so for sites that really care, really worried about their security, having the analyst bugged once a week or, you know, once a day, that's fine because a positive finding is incredibly important. And in addition, we found actual tunneling tools. And so some of these you can recognize because they have very identifiable patterns. Like there's a popular one called Iodine. And Iodine has a keep alive in it, meaning even if you're not doing anything with the covert channel, it'll still send out periodic or quasi-periodic lookups. And it's doing that because Iodine's meant for a two-way channel. So you can communicate both directions. And so internal system that's making the queries has to ask repeatedly, hey, do you have anything for me? Do you have anything for me? And so Iodine has this structure that's very easy to recognize. And we were able to look at some of the tunnels we found and say, you know, that's clearly Iodine. That was great. So that meant, you know, in that enormous quantity of lookups, there were actual tunnels that were not these big corporate sort of quasi tunnels like Sophos or Spotify. And we were able to find them. So that's the algorithm as a whole.
That's pretty cool. And it's really fascinating to think that intruders would use DNS because they have a high likelihood of being able to communicate through these corporate defenses. And legitimate providers make the same decision because they're
Yes.
trying to figure out a way to communicate. And they're like, oh, well, DNS, we'll do it that way.
Yes. I mean, yeah, exactly. It is such a difficult channel to fully suppress. You just gotta have it. And so, yeah, it really makes sense as the go-to covert channel.
So you mentioned with the way you implemented it, you could get, say, maybe a detection a day or perhaps a week. What if you were to tune your thresholds lower, like you talked about the 10 kilobyte limit? If you went
Yeah.
down to the 4, I just assume you're getting more of those alerts
Yeah,
per week or
exactly. It
day.
goes up as you lower that, and it goes up once you get much below 4, it goes up a lot. And but you can do the opposite, which is say, you know, in my environment, I really don't want to be bugged unless it's important, and set it at 100 kilobytes, and you're not going to get very many at all.
So I think this also points to the fact that you need evidence to look at once you've had one of these alerts.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you got to understand what is that system doing, and also just analyze long and hard, why is it talking to that domain? What's it trying to achieve? You know, just is it benign? Very often it is, but it takes a lot of context to make that determination.
Are you familiar with how any of that was done in your examples? Like how those, once you delivered an alert to someone, how they investigated what they found?
So for some of those, Lawrence Berkeley National Lab, one of our co-authors was there, and he was part of the security team. So he would run them down like he would. And then similarly at IBM, they were able to work with the security team at IBM Watson, which is where we got the IBM data. So for those two, we could do in depth. For the others, we would just have to do it contextually. Like, well, so some of them we can just recognize, hey, it's Iodine, and we know. And some of them, you're just doing who is on the name and Googling that and tunnel and stuff like that, you know, sort of secondary assessment that would generally resolve it. So there were a number where we're like, we just don't know.
I'm guessing at Berkeley they were looking at Zeek data to try to help understand what was going on.
Yes. Lawrence Berkeley runs The world's longest running Zeek installation wonderfully has logs going all the way back to even before I started running Zeek there. And I had scripts that produced similar logs. So, and they've kept all that. Little footnote on that, there have been multiple times when they've needed to go back 5 or more years to try to understand something. And that's been gold having that data for that long and really quite striking.
Oh yeah, the very first Mandiant MTrans report we reported, this is back in 2011. We reported that the median dwell time, I think, was 411 days. It was well over a year, and we
Oh,
had
man.
reliable case data where the forensic evidence would lead us back as far as 6 or 7 years, and that was as far as we were able to go back because the data simply ended. The intruders could have been there even longer,
That's
and
amazing. Yeah.
yeah, it.
It's sobering. Yeah.
Thankfully, things have improved quite a bit. I think the last report was down to 11 days. Who knows? Maybe if we could actually get down into single digit days, that would be quite an improvement.
That
But
would be great. On the other hand, that's average, right? So you're going to have a tail
yeah.
that you're going to care about.
And if let's say you get it down to a week, that's still a week of the intruder being able to do whatever they want, which we talk about. Trying to get down to an hour is sort of, if you can get down to an hour, that severely restricts the intruder's ability to accomplish their mission unless they're really on point and they know what they're doing.
So as
Yeah.
they build up their automation, they'll get better and better at doing it quickly.
Yes.
It also points out, and a comment I wanted to make earlier. So detecting these is the DNS stuff is what I term, and it's not really the term used in the community, but behavioral detection. Namely, you're finding behavior that means you already have a problem. It's not about preventing the initial problem. And yet it's just it highly useful for what you just framed, which is to reduce dwell time.
My experience, the best way to find out what an adversary knows about you is to compromise their infrastructure, get inside their decision loop, be on their computers. But that is a luxury that only a few in the world have. It is not
That
open to
sounds
private
so
organizations. Yeah.
fun.
So the next best is to do the sorts of what you're describing is these really thoughtful, high-end planning for certain types of activity and looking for it that way. And I think it's really clever that if you, like so many people try to approach this problem and try to solve everything, and you set some boundaries where you said, no, we're gonna think about what we can do and keep it within what the adversary would be able to do by setting those 4 and 10 kilobyte limits. I think that's pretty clever.
I actually have a talk I give sometimes about finding very damaging needles in enormous haystacks. And so I've gone after several problems like this one. This is one of the ones I really like to talk about, where that's indeed part of the overall strategy. You have to find a subset of the problem that you still care about, and not try to tackle the whole problem.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll chat about that one of those on another podcast.
I think that would be great. Vern, I really appreciate you spending this time with me today and explaining it so I could understand it. And I'm sure our audience will appreciate that as well. So thank you for joining us.
Sure, it was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Network Defenders podcast, sponsored by Corelight. We will see you on the network.
You've been listening to Corelight Defenders. To stay informed with expert intelligence on today's cybersecurity challenges, please subscribe to ensure you never miss an episode. We'll see you on the network.